Hi, podcast listeners. This is your host, Alicia Beach, and I am inviting you to a very special event. On Saturday, November 3rd, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., I would love for you to join me for the Mom Self-Care Planning Workshop. Yep, you heard the word planning. And I know if you're like me, you probably bristle at the word of planning and the thought of having to plan one more thing. But let me ask you something. When was the last time you were on your to-do list and you actually followed through and took care of yourself for once? Yeah, has it been a while? I know. Us mamas are super guilty of taking care of everybody else and always pushing our needs to the back burner. And I'm saying that you need to plan your own self-care. All from self-experience, because I'm planning my own. So I would love for you to join me for an amazing day. You're going to have breakfast and lunch. We're going to have amazing speakers and giveaways. And you are going to leave with an actual practical plan to put in place to implement self-care into your daily life. It is possible, ladies, and I'm going to show you how. So click on the link in our notes to grab a ticket very quickly before they sell out for our Mom Self-Care Planning Workshop on Saturday, November 3rd. I cannot wait to see you there. Welcome to the Mom Forum. I am your host, Alicia Wilson Beach. I am birth mom of three, adoptive mom of one, and stepmom to four. Yes, you counted that right. That is eight kids. And over the years, I have been known to completely overshare my story of motherhood. And I started this podcast to be able to share the common and maybe not so common experiences of motherhood from women of all walks of life. So thank you for joining me for these intimate mom-to-mom conversations, following each of my guests' journey through motherhood. These stories are honest and vulnerable. There's a little bit of humor and a whole lot of relatability. And my hope is that you can see yourself in one of these stories and know that you are absolutely not alone in this crazy journey through motherhood. Today, I'm sitting down with my friend Elaine McClanahan. She is so inspiring, and I have honestly never met someone with such a zest for life. And frankly, it is completely contagious. And I want you to listen to this episode so you can be infected with her zest for life, too. We, of course, chat about motherhood and her journey to happiness and accepting herself, and also divorce. It is an amazing conversation filled with so many inspiring moments, and I hope that you find her as infectious as I do. Thank you, Elaine, for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Again.
We're just gonna admit right up front
that mommy had a mommy brain moment, and so we're doing this for a second time.
Why not? And I just smacked the table, which is gonna...
Oh, well.
That's
oh,
okay. Well.
It's all in good fun.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here now, and we have a baby in the background, so if we hear anything, that's my little one.
No problem.
Now, let's go all the way back
okay.
to Elaine, pre-kids. Who was that lady?
Oh, depends on what age bracket we're talking.
We're talking adult Elaine.
Okay.
Pre-kids.
Pre-kids, adult Elaine, 20s. Elaine in 20s. Very career-wise, very successful, but very insecure. Terribly. Like, doing a Broadway show knowing that I was going to get fired any second.
And not true.
No. No, but, you know, such a perfectionist, that's what I made up in my mind. Mm-hmm. I remember I booked my first job, the National Tour of Cats, and I'm in Calgary and in my hotel room, my own hotel room. I didn't know anybody yet. And I am crawling around the floor like a cat because I'm convinced if I don't do this properly, they're going to fire me. I'm 21 years old. 21? Was I 20? Yeah, 21.
And in a huge touring Broadway show and thinking that, no, this is, I'm not really going to stay here.
They will find out they made a mistake and they will send me home.
That's just insanity.
Yeah.
But
did 30s? You get fired? No. Of course not. Of course not. And then had a really great singing and dancing career. But my 30s, I think probably about mid-30s, I started getting a little braver. Mm-hmm. Like my whole career, I was labeled, I say labeled, but I was a dancer who sings well.
Yeah.
And I knew I could sing. Like I knew I could really sing. Mm-hmm. But every time I got in front of people, I was terrified because I really was buying into the story that I was not a singer. I was a dancer.
Yeah.
And allowing that to dictate how I saw myself, you know, in the reverse, you walk into an audition and they're going to see what they see. And I made it up in my mind before anything even happened that I was not enough, not good enough. And that's how I would go to every vocal audition. So
not nail it.
Yeah. Because so terrified. So my mid-30s, I shifted my thinking. I started going to karaoke and doing kamikaze karaoke. You know what that is?
I do not.
When somebody picks a song for you and you just have to sing it. And it was so scary. If I didn't know the song, I just made it up. Completely stood on stage and made it up in front of people. And it really just kind of started busting through all these fear things that I had made up in my head about singing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I am scared to death of karaoke. I've done it once in my life in front of very dear friends. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It will never be seen. It will never probably happen again.
Well, now that you said that, we will have to schedule something. Yes, because, you know, that's what life is about now.
I attempted maybe 3 Broadway auditions.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, we're not going to do this anymore. The singing part, I would literally be trembling.
Yeah.
So kudos to you for putting yourself out there to get over it.
Yeah.
It is scary.
Yeah.
So in the midst of you going through your career, and mm-hmm. not that it's over, but pre-kids, you met someone. Mm-hmm. And you guys decided to get married at some point.
That was in college. We met in 1991 in college at NYU. And we got married in 1995. So I had been on tour for about a year and a half. And we decided to get married. We had been together for 4 years. We got mm-hmm. married in 95. Yeah.
And you have to tell us a little bit about your wedding because I think it's the most kick-ass wedding I've ever heard of.
Okay. So I'm not the stereotypical girl with the dreams of the white wedding. I wanted something fun and quirky, and I didn't. It all stemmed from me not wanting to wear a big old white dress. Isn't that funny? So we had a Halloween wedding, and everyone was in costume. And I came as Red Riding Hood with a white pleather dress that I bought at a transvestite store on 8th Street in Manhattan. And it cost me
$120. Now that's a bargain.
Yes, and my husband had a cat's wig on because he was the wolf. And I did his makeup and he wore teeth and he had put hair on his hands except for the ring finger. It was empty. Yeah, and everyone came dressed up and was in this big old mansion in New Jersey, all decorated, you know, Halloween. That's the hors d'oeuvres amazing. Were on coffins. It was so great.
That detail.
Oh, it was so fun. So fun.
So clearly you're not the typical girly girl.
No.
And I ask everyone this. Were you the girl that dreamed about having kids or was that just the farthest thing?
No. It wasn't a thought at all. Mm-mm. Dogs.
Dogs.
Dogs. And no way, kids. No.
So when did kids start coming into the picture for you?
I was mid-30s, and I had just done a show on Broadway that ran for 3 weeks. It was with Twyla Tharp.
Oh, wow.
Which was, like, the most fantastic audition experience and rehearsal experience of my life, just working with her. Being hired by her.
Yeah.
And then getting to work with her. So I thought to myself, okay, I'm 35. If I'm going to have kids, I want to have them now. Because as you wait, you know, obviously it starts to get dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I felt like as a dancer, I kind of did it. Like, yeah. You know, I did my Broadway shows. I worked with Twyla Tharp. Like, there were things that I was like, I was good with. So stepping into that next part of my life was okay.
So it was a conscious decision, you mm-hmm. becoming a mom. Did you say, okay, we're going to have 2 kids and then we're done? Or was it open? What was that discussion like with your husband?
I had always thought 3 kids. But then after 1, I was like, this is really hard. And, you know, I was scared because I had this image in my mind of what I would be as a mother. And as a mother, I thought, all of a sudden you start wearing high-waisted jeans and driving around in your minivan. And I was like, no, that's not me at all. Of course, that doesn't happen.
Yes.
You are you. You just are you as a mom. And I also wanted to make sure that as soon as I had my kids, I got back in shape because I didn't want to keep an excuse going in my head. Oh, well, you know, 5 years down the road, I never got the baby weight off. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I got in shape again really fast. And then it was like, okay, I really do want another kid because I want my son to have a brother or a sister. Mm-hmm. It's a brother. But and if I'm going to have another kid, I got to do it now because I'm back in shape. And if I get comfortable here, I won't want to be pregnant again.
Yeah.
So we had 2nd boy.
And as you were pregnant with the 2nd, you did an amazing video. Mm-hmm. You did a parody of a Beyonce song, which mm-hmm. I think is absolutely hilarious. And
thank
I
you.
Will add the link to it for the podcast. But tell us where you got the idea mm-hmm. from that and any secrets that happened on the shoot.
Oh, okay. So I had started thinking about it and because the song was popular and I was in a writing group. And I kept bringing it up, and people were saying, you have to do this. You have to do this. And as it got closer and closer, you know, when you're pregnant, everything is just, it just feels weird and wrong. And I was a dancer, and I felt wrong. And I was like, how can I do it? And it got closer, and people were saying, oh, just put a pillow, you know, have the baby put a pillow in there and do it after. And I thought, no, I will not be inauthentic about it. And so a week before I delivered, I shot this video at my husband's high school on the campus. And the man who directed it and edited it, his name is Anthony Falcon. And his wife was not a nanny, but like she'd come over and babysit for me once in a while with my older uh-huh. son so I could take a moment for myself. And so he was a filmmaker. And so he shot the video on this campus. And as we're shooting, people from the school are coming out and seeing me doing this, you know, so funny. All
in a
pregnant,
unitard,
in a,
right?
In a bodysuit that I went to the store and bought. And this woman is looking at me like, okay, I'm trying on bodysuits in my big old pregnant belly, like in tights, like going in.
Wait, the fact that you're dancing around to a Beyonce song with a big old pregnant belly.
Okay, when we say dancing, I'm going to put it in air quotes because when I watch it as a dancer, I'm like, oh God. Oh,
but when any normal person watches it, awesome. They're going to be like, in the world did she do that?
Oh my goodness. At the end, we had more choreography and I was so tired. I said, can we just do the same step over and you edit it together? Because I've got nothing left. I have nothing left. So yeah.
And you delivered a week later.
Yep.
After that. And your boys are born on the same day.
June 3rd.
That's
2008, 2010.
Wow. That's like an anomaly. But
It's not completely, I had C-sections.
Oh, okay.
So I had not planned C, well, the 2nd one was planned. So I had a planned C-section, the 2nd one, and I really tried to find a doctor who would deliver a VBAC, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's hard to find.
And I did.
Oh, wow.
But when he looked at my records, he found out that I was a single.
We had a stinky tired one. So you wanted to deliver VBAT.
Yes. So I found a doctor who would do it. And when he looked at my records, I was a single closure and not a double closure. So what that means is that there's risk with a single closure stitching of tearing if you deliver vaginally after. So he said, well, I could schedule you on June 3rd. And I was like, June 3rd. And he could move it to June 4th or June 2nd. And so we just kept it June 3rd.
Yeah. Still.
Yeah.
What are the chances?
It's good.
Yes.
We're very organized.
So your two boys are very extremely different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering how you have managed to parent both of them through their different personalities. How do you deal with mothering two kids that are very different? Which I know most kids are very different from each other. But
yeah, I mean, I think just like as I would deal with anybody in life, you know, everybody's different. So I'm going to speak to you differently than I would speak to some of my other friends because you're you. So, you know, finding what works for Lincoln will not work for Kale. That just comes with, you know, trial and error, I guess. I know I used to be a yeller. And with Lincoln, when I would raise my voice, he would clam up and he would say, yes, mommy, you know, he'd get really like obedient. But Kale would clench his fist and scream, he'd get full of rage. And or he would be absolutely terrified of me. And I decided I wasn't going to yell anymore.
That's a very tough decision to make because it is very easy to yell. I know it's something I've been working on.
Yeah.
But I have to say one of the things that I admire about you is you come across as such a conscious parent. Like you're so very conscious of how your parenting affects your children. And I know you said before that you, when you started your dance career, you were dealing with a lot of self-consciousness and not being comfortable with yourself. And I'm wondering, did that transfer over into your parenting? Or did somewhere in between there you were able to deal with what was causing that so that it didn't transfer into your parenting and you were able to be so grounded in your parenting?
My body issues, I was anorexic and bulimic. If I was eating, I was throwing up. If I wasn't eating, I wasn't eating. You know, if I wasn't throwing up, I wasn't eating. So that in my life, working on myself, realizing that choices I was making were harmful to me and to people around me, in looking at myself, I realized that part of the reason that I needed the eating disorder was because there were so many feelings that I couldn't deal with, that either I was taught that it was inappropriate to deal with those feelings or have those feelings at all, or that expressing them outwardly would make people look at you different. Mm-hmm. So I learned to stuff those things. And, you know, I feel like if you're stuffing feelings, the energy's got to go somewhere. It's got to come out either in alcoholism or, you know, obsessiveness with this or that. Like, you've got to deal with those, that angst. And so with my kids, I really make an effort to allow them to work through their own feelings. I don't have an opinion about what they should feel about this or that.
Mm-hmm.
I allow them to express themselves, and we work through it based on their own experience. I'm not there to give them an experience or tell them how to feel. I'm just there to ask them, okay, this is what you're feeling. How is that going to translate? What are the actions you're going to take based on what you're feeling right now? Now, I don't say those exact words. Yes. I talk to them on their age level a little bit more. But like, what actions are you going to take? And then walk it forward. Like, what are the results that can come from taking those actions? How is that? Are you okay with that? If you're not okay with that, what can you do differently?
Which is very hard to do because it's very easy to take what your kids are doing personal and not remove yourself
uh-huh.
from their experience and mm-hmm. allow them to go through that. And I know you've gone through a lot of therapy to work on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of those skills that you've learned in therapy that you are transferring over to your kids so that other parents can hear what you're doing and try it for themselves? Because I know I've adopted some of your ways
uh-huh.
from talking to you, and also we're in a group together, which we'll get to later.
Yes, okay.
What are some of those skills that you have adopted from what you've learned in therapy that you're now using with your children to help them have their own experiences and feel their own emotions and mm. without you feeling personally attached?
Mm-hmm. The knowledge that I am my own person and they are their own people, and that we are going to have different experiences of life. No matter what I say or do, they are still their own people. And honoring that difference, I am a guide. I'm not the absolute. So to me, there are very few things that are right and wrong in my house. If someone says, get off me, don't touch me, you stop.
Yeah.
That is a stop. So if somebody keeps on, you know, pressing, that's not okay. And we work on that. But experiences and feelings, I don't have a right and wrong. Like, you are who you are. You're having this experience. So my opinion about it is really invalid, and I'm able to remove myself from that. Goodness.
That's amazing, though, because I know for me that's a struggle. It's like, this is not about me. This is about me supporting my child in his or her experience. And that is really difficult to remove yourself from. So kudos.
Well, if you know, thank you. If you know that you putting your opinion on it, your spin on it all the time does not allow them to work through their own life experiences, and that walk that, you know, 10, 15 years into the future, do you want to create a child who is able to think on their feet without having to call mom or say, you know, what do I do here? Like, can you think through it and make stuff happen in the moment? That's a skill that they develop because they're doing it. If you allow them to do it, they will learn. If you keep telling them the right way and making them do it this way or that way, they will learn that they need help all the time. That's my theory. I think it's pretty good.
I like that theory.
But it's hard.
It is very hard. I know that your youngest is in therapy, which I think is great because a lot of people avoid that because they don't want their child to be labeled as a problem with them or whatever that label may be that mm-hmm. they think then makes their child less than.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you see it as empowering him a little bit.
Okay, so this whole stigma about therapy, like when we're in trouble, the thinking that got you in that trouble, you're going to use that same thinking to get you out of that trouble? That does not make sense to me. You go find somebody who can give you a different perspective, who has a different set of values possibly, who had a different life than you, to see the situation and go, hey, how about this? Where you get to go, oh, I hadn't even thought of that. Like, yeah, of course, I can take actions based on that thinking. And even if it doesn't work, you end up with more options. Yeah. And then you get to choose instead of being stuck. So therapy, absolutely. Everybody should go to therapy at one point in their lives or talk to somebody who sees life differently than you or doesn't have, like when I coach people, I don't have an investment in that you stay with your husband or that you stay with this job. I have an investment in that you are living your life in a way that brings you joy, mm-hmm. that causes you to treat people with love and kindness and that you feel fulfilled. That's what I care about. So therapy for my son, he went when Pop-Pop died. He took it very hard. He didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And he was acting out in school. And then my husband had a horrible accident about almost 2 years ago now. And he didn't understand, you know, and he was acting out in school. Like, so yeah, he went to therapy. And then recently, my husband and I have decided that we are going to get a divorce. Mm-hmm. And so he was in therapy as well. And it's so tremendously helpful for him. It teaches him different ways of dealing with his anger and upset.
Yeah, because he has strong emotions, much like my son.
Yes, and he's very physical. So if the first reaction is anger and then physical, that doesn't work well in school.
No.
No.
Not very well at all.
Yeah.
That's good. And so through this process of you separating with your husband, how have you been able to communicate with your boys through that?
So fortunately, Matt and I have never had like an angry, mean relationship. We've always been respectful of each other, which is, I can't even imagine what a divorce looks like when parents are evil to each other and the effect it has on the kids. How we present it to our children is tantamount, really. I mean, they will take on our feelings. So if I am evil to Matt in this process, they will take that on. And either they will rebel against me or be angry at him. And I don't want that. I want them to love us both completely. I want them to love being with him. I want them to love being with me, you know, with the same enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So I feel like in divorce, if you can take your ego out of it, pull your ego out, and know that it benefits everyone if they love both of you equally, and that he's going to have his own experience with the kids, I'm going to have my own experience. I don't have to affect it. That's theirs. And they get to develop that and create that on their own. And same with us, me and my boys. Everything's going to work out so much better.
Yeah, because most divorce is very ugly.
Ugly.
And what I've seen you guys doing is not ugly at all. It's a breath of fresh air.
We care about each other. We just realized that after 26 years of being together, our lives are kind of going like this. We like so many things, but different things. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very different. And we just found that those things are not coming together anymore. Our differences aren't making us, you know, want to hang out. So it's been not easy. I won't say it's easy, but, you know, there are times when I go, oh, you know, I'm 26 years. Yeah. Like, that's so my heart of 26 years. That's my growing up.
Yeah.
And he's a great man. And I want him to be with somebody if he wants to be with somebody who sees him like that, you know, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, like that.
That's just an amazing skill that to be able to take that ego out of it and really still sit in the love of that person, even when there's turmoil or changes
disagreement
going on,
that
to sit in that love. And again, I think that goes back to the skills that you've picked up from therapy, which you are now sharing with other women in a group.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a therapist, so
you're
let's
not a therapist,
be specific.
No. You are a coach.
I'm a coach. Uh-huh.
But you're using some of those skills to share them with other women, and you've started a women's group, which I have made a part of my weekly self-care. It is a prescribed part of it. What made you want to do that?
So at 46 years old, I think this is the time when a lot of people, a lot of my friends, at least I notice, go, okay, if this is the way my life is going to be for the next 30, 40 years, am I okay with that? And a lot of people say, no, I'm not. Mm-hmm. And so in hearing these stories from my friends, talking to people, I thought, gosh, I need to open this up. And I know therapy is scary to a lot of people. It's hard to talk about yourselves. So I thought, if you're willing to step into a group where you can share if you want or not, then you get to see that you're not alone. There are so many people who are dealing with the same stuff. And the willingness to just say it, takes the pressure off a lot, at least for me. You know, the willingness to speak about me having been bulimic and anorexic, now I'm just like, yeah,
yeah,
I did that. Yeah, that didn't work well for me. You know, I'm actually in better shape now than I ever was while I was throwing up.
Yeah.
Treating my body so badly, but like being able to speak about it. Why am I keeping that in? That's who I am. I like who I am. I've done things in my life that maybe not the best choice at the moment, but they've made me who I am and I like who I am. So how do I open this up and create a room where people can start speaking those things?
And just hearing your experience and someone else's experience is something that is more support than you could even imagine, because mm-hmm. you see yourself in someone else and you know you're not alone.
Yeah.
So providing that space, especially for women, because I think we beat ourselves up far oh, yeah. more than men do.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've had to, you know, go back to the 50s, the 60s. We had to have it all done and look pretty doing it.
Yeah.
We had, when husband came home, we had to be all done up and makeup on and, you know, oh, here's the dinner. Dinner's ready, you know, so it was all about appearances, right? So we learned that we can and we will, right? Mm-hmm. And then we neglect ourselves in the process, all the pretending.
Yes, whereas we would be much happier if we are just living our authentic selves.
Life is messy.
It is messy.
It's okay. It's messy for everyone.
That's why I do this podcast, because mm-hmm. I want people to hear the messiness and know that you can still be happy in your messiness.
Messiness is cooler and more interesting. Quite
way more interesting.
Quite frankly.
Now, another interesting thing about you.
Oh, dear.
This is a good thing, because you are one rocking kick-ass mom. You also have a rock band.
I do.
That you sing in.
Yeah.
When did that start?
So another thing I learned about myself when I became a mom is, as a creative person, I needed to keep creative, because if I'm not being creative, I'm a monster.
Yes.
I need to nurture that part of me. It's who I am, like in my soul.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband had gotten me this, enrolled me in this program at Guitar Center Studios called Rock Show. And you write down what you do, and I wrote singer, you know, and they group you with a band. They put you together with a band, and you work on different genres of music, and you rehearse for, I don't know how many, can't remember how many weeks, and then you perform. So you'll do like 5-6 songs that you've rehearsed, and through that experience, I met a drummer and a bass player, and we put a band together, and we just started. We started looking for a guitar player, and we went through a few until our current guitar player, who's the coolest, most awesome guitar player ever. My band is awesome. We play not a ton. We play a couple gigs a month because that's what we want to do. I don't do it to make money. I do it because when I'm on stage and I'm singing like that, I don't know if you have this, if you know this for yourself yet, like, I just know I'm supposed to be there.
Yeah.
I just feel it. I just know it. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is life.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
Every person should have that.
God, it's so fun. But it took me a while to find that, like to know that about myself.
Well, and especially in motherhood, like there, you have to have a piece of yourself that doesn't belong to anybody else. It has to be a piece that is all yours, I think.
I would say a big piece.
Yes.
Because there's truth too. If you're not taking care of yourself, you really can't take care of other people well. You know, you can make it work.
Yeah.
But really. Oh, who's at the door? It's like Pee-wee's Playhouse. Who is it?
The grocery place.
Ooh, groceries. That's hilarious. Okay, that's funny, because that brought up another thing for me that I've learned over the years. When something doesn't go the way you expect, people so quickly get all like bent out of shape about it.
Ugh.
And in my mind, I'm like, okay, what's next? Like, what can I do with that? Like our snafu last week, I was not upset 1 second because I thought to myself, I just got a rehearsal.
That's how a good cool, way to
right?
Frame it. Yeah.
But I don't sit in the negativity too long.
Well, I've learned, especially with kids, shit is gonna happen.
Yeah, you can't. And you just can't be roll stuck with it. Yeah. No. Because something else is coming. You better be ready. Oh, yeah. Let it go.
And I always feel like the moment that I get in the flow, everything just goes.
Of course. To expect anything else is like asking for trouble for yourself.
Exactly. But that is life. That is motherhood.
Mm-hmm. Welcome it. Welcome it. Just bring it. Show me what's going to come.
And I've always, my parents have always taught me, and my husband and I try to teach our kids, life is going to happen. And it's about the choices that you make on day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. That defines who you are, and mm-hmm. that defines how your life is going to go. Mm-hmm. And so I try to surround myself with people that I look up to and people that I think set good examples of motherhood and just life in general. And mm-hmm. so when I see people like you out there making their mistakes, living their lives.
Loudly.
Unapologetically. Mm-hmm. And I see their kids growing and maturing and becoming these individuals. I always think to myself, what are they doing that I can learn from?
Oh, that's success right there.
There's no other way.
There are a lot of people who can't do that because they're so married to their need to either show everyone that they've got it, they don't need help, mm-hmm. I can do this myself, you know, or like the ego, it's the ego.
Yeah.
I feel like it's such a testament to how secure you are as a human being if you're able to ask other people for help who know more.
Yeah.
You know, I got what I got. But you got what you got, and I want some of that. You know who was like that to me? Obama, Barack Obama.
Yeah, a good learner.
Yes, willing to go, okay, I'm a smart guy, but in this area, you're smarter, and I would like to know that.
Yeah.
I loved him. No. Sorry to get political. I loved him. You can edit that out. Yeah.
You have to, I feel like, because with parenting, you just get thrown into it. And there's a million books and there's no book.
Right.
There's so much. It's overwhelming. And so my thing is to look to other moms especially.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a thing that comes with being a woman where you have to deal with your inner voice a lot more. And I think we're harder on ourselves and our expectations of motherhood than fathers are.
Do you think?
I may be wrong. But I feel like there's more of a picture painted in on the outside in media or whatever of how motherhood should go.
Uh-huh.
And we buy into it. And when we don't live up to that, it's oh my God, I'm a horrible mom. Oh,
so it's self-perpetuating, mm-hmm. which means we can back it up because we are buying into it, which means they're selling it.
Yeah.
If we're not buying, they're not selling. So this is our job to shift the thinking about motherhood and being a woman. It's our job.
Exactly.
If we sit back and just let it run its course, we are going to get more of the same. And then we can't complain because we did nothing. So
we have to stand in who we are.
Oh, yeah.
As moms, as women.
Mm-hmm.
And push it.
Isn't that fun? Push it good.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
So glad you came back.
Anytime. Did it record?
Did it record?
Okay.
Got it.
Darn it. Oh. I'll have to come back just for coffee.
Well, I'll be there tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
I love you.
Love you too.
Thank you again for joining me for this conversation on the Mom Forum, and I hope that you were able to relate to some part of this story. Please join us over on social media on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at the Mom Forum, or come give us a visit on our site, themom-forum.com, to read our new blog posts, shop our products, or check out our next event. Thank you, and we will see you the next time on the Mom Forum.